Greetings, Curiosity Builders. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. If you couldn't do the activity that defines your profession, then who are you? Why do you do what you do? How can you be the dumbest person in the room? I was inundated with so many thought-provoking questions in this conversation with brand strategist and founder of Lucere Design, Rachel Nichols. From her journey to overcome what wasn't working in her life to becoming a leader, Rachel dives deep into the habits and interactions with professional communities that transformed her life and work. We also talk about the importance of having a bias toward action, learning to navigate your own resistance, and being okay with accidentally stumbling onto the path that makes sense for your work. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/401. Rachel, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Heather Crank recommended you a while ago, and I'm glad that we finally have a chance to connect.
Yeah, no, this is awesome. Thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. So one of the things as I was Instagram stalking you was you had like this great post on seven questions to ask someone or seven questions to master. And I'm going to ask you a form of one of those questions.
Oh boy.
What's capturing your attention today?
Well, today specifically, community. So I had a really great group call this morning with like, I think there was 80 people total, maybe half of them had their cameras on. And it was just, you know, you get to kind of see everybody and we're all going through some version of the world right now. And I just felt so grateful to be plugged into that kind of supportive community.
When you're in a call with 80 people, does that fill you with anxiety or does that fill you with just like, oh, it's my people?
2 years ago, when I joined said group, it filled me with a lot of anxiety. Just saying hello and introducing myself gave me physical shakes. But now, 2 years later, after being on that call almost weekly for 2 years, now it just fills me with thankfulness and gratefulness and all the warm fuzzies.
That's such an insight into like growing yourself as a person, because like not everyone wants to go through those moments of, you know, shaking and learning how to speak about yourself so that you can then find that comfort on the other end.
2 years ago. So I'll say that a lot. 2 years ago, I made a decision that I hated staying still and being stuck more than I hated being uncomfortable, and that I loved growing more than I liked feeling comfortable. So I made decisions that were kind of uncharacteristic, such as joining a big group of people way more experienced than me, further along towards their goals, joined video calls and kept my video on and made sure to actually say hi and not just lurk in the background. It was this point of going like, you know what, this is going to be uncomfortable for a while, but if I can stick it out, it'll eventually get easier and I'll get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
When it speaks to one of your values too, or one of the ways that you define yourself, because I mean, if you define yourself as stubborn, you're just going to see the course, aren't you?
Yeah. When I dig my heels, that's where the stubborn comes in. It's like, I have to have a good cause, but when I've got a good cause, I'm definitely stubborn.
How long did it take you to really find the words that define yourself, but also own them?
It's kind of an ongoing journey, really. I feel like some of them I've identified since I was, you know, I don't know, 12 or somewhere around there. But over the years, Some of them have come and gone, and some of them have stuck around. I can get kind of impatient and wish I had it all like perfectly wordsmithed right now, but I think I'm still discovering a lot of that.
What does that discovery look like? Is it, do you like have a morning routine where you reflect, or is it more of the 80 person conference call kind of, oh, we're going to focus on Rachel today and we're going to kind of walk through what she's going through?
I do have some routines in my life that I'm working on being more disciplined about, but I've journaled off and on since I was 10. So I think that habit, even though I've even put it down for a couple of years at a time, always having that to go back to as kind of a normal part of my life, it does help with that kind of unpacking what's going on in your head, how you're feeling, why you might be feeling that way. So that habit is useful, and I'll usually do that in the morning. I read a lot, and over the years, well, I guess the journaling, writing of any kind has been a part of my life in some way for many years. As I've gotten to know people, especially more intentionally over the last couple of years of kind of deciding introvert was not an excuse to isolate myself, I have met some really amazing people that just through conversation, through that reflection back at me, they'll give me feedback. They'll let me know, like, especially when I'm being too hard on myself, that I'm being too hard on myself. That reflection back is actually really, really helpful for me because I can get kind of lost in my own interior world and then my own assessment of myself, which is usually way too harsh.
Yeah, interesting. I'm so completely fascinated with what you just said too, of like, I can no longer be an introvert. And just that making that conscious decision is so powerful. I mean, what got you to that 2 years ago?
For a long time, I'd seen myself in more of a supporting role, like really good at coming alongside somebody else and being that person that really helped make things happen. And because of that view of myself, I never thought, I want to be in business. I want to do my, you know, like be an entrepreneur or be my own boss, or, you know, different ways of saying that. I didn't really think of myself that way. I didn't see myself as a leader. And 2-ish years ago, I started listening to a guy named Chris Doe that I believe you're familiar with. I was looking for design related stuff on YouTube and stuff that was, that would help me in my work at a marketing agency. And I was listening to some stuff that he was talking about that had to do more with design and stuff like that, but filtered in there is all his mindset stuff and business stuff and just kind of peppered in there with the design stuff. And what ended up happening is I resonated so much with what he had to say that I started picturing myself like, oh my gosh, what if I could be a leader? What if I could kind of take charge of my own career path rather than always relying on finding that person to partner with? And that, I don't know, it was like this little pesky weed or earworm or whatever that would just would not go away. And so that kind of, that really led me to start going, well, what if? That makes me uncomfortable in a lot of ways, but eventually the vision of it became so much more attractive to me than how much I was afraid of different aspects. So I'm still an introvert. Like, introversion is not social anxiety. I have experienced both. And the fact that I need quiet time to reflect and recharge my batteries is still absolutely true. But what I have grown is my social skills and my ability to listen to people and my communication skills and my curiosity about other people. So that is really what I've had to work on over the last 2 years. And now people meet me and they haven't known me from before. And they're like, you're an introvert. I'm like, yes, I am. Darn it. Don't get me on my soapbox about the difference.
I love getting people on their soapboxes. That's what makes life so much fun.
Well, you got a podcast. It's like what you do professionally.
One of the things that I really appreciate about what you just said is this idea of choosing to be a leader. You mentioned that before you just wanted to come alongside someone and support them, but eventually you chose to become a leader. And even though you're leading, you're still supporting. It's just not, it's a lot different type of support than just staying in the background.
Right. Being able to reframe it and see leadership in that light really made it feel like, okay, this is going to be a journey. This is probably going to be uncomfortable and hard for me, but I could see how to get there.
And in that journey, is that where you go from, I'm assuming, calling yourself a designer to becoming a brand strategist?
You know, I never even really called myself a designer. Everything I did in the marketing agency time was self-taught, and I did a lot of different things. Was mostly just game for the challenge and let me try something new and learn something new. So even though I was doing design related stuff, eventually it was like I kind of ended up taking it on. I never felt comfortable calling myself a designer, but because it's in the mix with all the marketing stuff I absorbed and tactics and strategies and the reason why you do X, Y, or Z, then led me to the brand strategy side. Not really from design exactly, but from it all. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's why I was attracted to strategy, is because it really allowed me to step into that big picture, look at everything and how it all plays together. I didn't try to learn it all. I wasn't trying to become anything in particular. I was just trying to be helpful. And so I got all this somewhat random experience, and now almost all of it informs what I do as a strategist, because I have at least some knowledge of why you do this or what this is good for and how it intersects with all these other pieces. Mm-hmm. It's been useful, but I kind of stumbled on that path.
So strategy is definitely one of those words that we're seeing used a lot in today's time, mm-hmm. Whether it's actual strategy or just someone's opinion, that's up for discussion, of course. But right. What is brand strategy from your experience?
Brand strategy is the foundational plan, the platform that you put together. So like if I'm thinking like building a house, it's putting the boards in and the rebar and all of that to support the concrete, and then you're building this foundation. You can build everything for branding off of it. So branding is an active thing. It's something that you build, and it's something that a lot of disciplines contribute to. So you have a design piece. So a lot of people that will say, you know, they're in branding, a lot of the time they're in the visual design aspect of it. But then there's people who are also will sometimes say, I'm in branding, but they're a writer. And they really work on nailing down that messaging and getting everything on the written communication side nailed down. So what I get to do is establish the why of why everything is the way that it is and keep all those moving parts congruent with one another. Mm-hmm. So another thing that I used to do back in the day was I dabbled in directing short films.
Oh, cool.
And in some ways, brand strategy feels a lot like that. There's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of collaborators, and the director has to keep their eye on the bigger vision, the goal, and make sure everyone is working towards that same goal. And it's a big job. But there's something about the brand strategy side that reminds me of doing that. And I loved being the director. Mm-hmm. And there's just something, I don't even have language for it yet. Maybe someday I will.
I absolutely hope that you write a blog post about how brand strategy is like filmmaking.
That's a good idea, actually. Might steal that.
No, you said it. So it's not, you're only stealing from yourself.
That's the best kind of stealing.
That's right. Well, and I've never heard it that way. And that I, as someone who makes films as well, like that totally makes sense.
Oh, I didn't know you did films. That's awesome.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I primarily work in the documentary world.
Oh, documentaries. That's a beast, man.
Yeah. So that was a lot of my upbringing in terms of my career. And then podcasting on top of that. So it was a natural connection between documentary and then interviewing people for podcasts.
I can see that. And I feel like we're going to have a separate conversation and geek out about filmmaking.
Absolutely. I'm totally just going to ask now, like, what types of short films were you making?
I have a soft spot for like fantasy sci-fi. And my husband and I actually worked on these together since we were dating. Then we did three short films, and this was like what we crammed in between meeting each other and then before we were married and had kids.
That's awesome.
And the first one was this kind of dystopian sci-fi, and then the second one was more surreal fantasy. I don't know, it had a lot of like hidden layers of meaning and all that kind of fun stuff. It was fun for me to put together, and lots of people had questions after watching it. And I was like, you decide what it means, because I just thought it was fun. And then the third one was a like adventure. It had some kind of sci-fi feel to it, but it was definitely more fantasy. Yeah. And for that one, it was like 35 minutes long, and we built all the costumes, and we did, I mean, it was crazy. Looking back, I'm like, what were we biting off? But our two-bedroom apartment was piled high with like EVA foam and hot glue and it spray paint. It was a blast.
Do you just sit around sometimes thinking, yeah, maybe we should do that again?
Oh yeah. No, I definitely would love to have that experience again. As crazy as it was and how it overtook our life for like a year and a half, just that one film alone, I definitely have a soft spot for it. And I don't know how it could come back into my life again, but I hope it does somehow.
Yeah. Well, and I think in that slight detour that we just took from brand strategy to filmmaking, there was something that you said in there that I think is an important connection. And that is sometimes it's just fun. I mean, yeah, brand strategy is so businessy and so important, but shouldn't there be an element of fun in it as well?
Oh yeah. No, this is, I do this because it's fun. 100%. How do you get through all the scary getting out of your comfort zone stuff if it's not freaking fun?
So what led you to work with fashion brands?
Some of the doing like the costume stuff for the filmmaking. I'd been trying to sew and do stuff like that since I was a kid. I even did a very small, very local fashion show somewhere in there. I think it was during the filmmaking days, and I put some stuff together, and it was a fun experience. So it's like I was never a fashion designer at all, but there are aspects of clothing that always fascinated me, and that it's a way that we kind of socially communicate with each other. And so when I started my business, there was a certain thing about my own aesthetic that I was like, I think this fits in well with the visual language that fashion usually likes to use. And then I also like, I get why they are passionate about it. Like, I was never as passionate as they are because I'm not doing it, but I get why they are. The only thing now, I mean, with the current climate is I'm probably going to be pivoting my own niche a little bit. I still don't have all the answers for what that's going to look like. If I'm able to continue working with fashion, it's going to be in a slightly different way. The problems have shifted. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if what I'm able to help them with should be their priority right now.
That really brings up one of the main reasons that I reached out to you was around a post that you shared, strategy in times of crisis. And as a brand strategist, you know, how should creative entrepreneurs, brands, and businesses really be approaching this time? I mean, you mentioned that you're looking at pivoting, you know, like how should we be thinking right now?
I mean, it is kind of relative. Everyone's affected in a little bit different way. I mean, some businesses and some industries are booming right now because of it, but that means they have other problems, you know. What I was observing just in people's behavior, conversations I was having, there seemed to be these kind of two main ways to react. One was frozen. Like, I don't know what we should do. There's so many unknowns. How do we make smart decisions right now? And then the other was like this opposite reaction, panic, making quick decisions and just completely reacting to everything. And it really had this flavor of panic. So as I started thinking about it myself, finding myself, you know, in the same exact boat as everyone else, how am I thinking about this? And the way that I think and the reason why I work in strategy really is because I'm able to kind of pull back and look at this from a big picture standpoint. And there's no way to do strategy the way you would normally do strategy, which is to try and eliminate as many unknowns as possible and navigate your way forward and kind of figure out, you know, so many steps ahead and all this kind of stuff. Like, that's impossible right now. So what should we do? Because panicking isn't definitely not the right thing to do either. So my answer was that the best thing to do is to strategize out 1 to 3 steps ahead. You can only see so far ahead. So be smart about that far ahead. If it's 1 to 3 steps, figure out what makes sense for those 1 to 3 steps. And then as you're taking those steps, be thinking about and keeping your eye on what comes next. And what happens when you can do that, or when you can do it in these little short bursts, is you are better positioned to adjust. So as the landscape changes, as unknowns become known, you're able to make those adjustments while you're also moving. So you're not waiting for the fog to lift and see the whole landscape again and before you make any decisions and then it's too late. You're able to navigate your way through the fog a few steps at a time. That way you don't end up either getting caught flat-footed or you've made so many panic decisions that you're in a completely different place in the map by the time the fog clears.
That's so good. And what I appreciate about that is the ability to take care of what you need like right now and still have that momentum toward the next 1 to 3 steps.
Being able to do that, hopefully before all of this happened, you had a clear idea of what your goal is and where you're trying to end up. You have your compass set, so to speak. Being able to do this kind of short range strategizing is going to be a lot easier when you do have that goal. If you went into this and you were kind of hazy on your direction, then the first thing you're going to want to do is go back to your core values and why you're doing what you're doing in the first place. And then decide what's your goal, where do you want to end up? And then start moving and taking, you know, those just couple steps at a time. it's almost like not even worth going through the work of strategizing out movement if you don't know where you're going.
Oh, that's so powerful. I love that reconnection to core values and that compass of why you exist as a business.
Yeah, that's super important.
Even as you're describing that, I'm selfishly thinking of myself and like, because it's like, okay, I had a good connection to my core values and my compass, even as this was happening. So now that as we are going into month two and then beyond, it's like I'm able to kind of operate from that security of my values as opposed to having to like, well, why do I do this? Like, okay, it's really hard right now. Like, am I going to be able to get out of bed and operate?
Right.
Or am I just going to, you know, like go sit on the couch for the rest of the day and just unwind because I don't have that connection to who I am as a business and a person.
Right. And what I find too is that when you know why you're doing what you're doing, if what you're doing gets shut down and you can no longer be doing it, you still have the why you chose it in the first place. So if you can go back to that why, you can actually usually find other ways to express that why that are accessible right now. Mm-hmm. And you can maintain that being able to, you know, kind of have a reason to wake up, have a reason to keep doing things or pushing towards your goal. If you're doing something and you don't have a why, it's going to be a lot harder to find some kind of a purpose through all of this.
There's so many books, there's so many talks about the importance of why, but I mean, where would you recommend people start? For lack of a better phrase, where do you recommend people start with why?
I actually haven't read the books myself, but I've had them recommended to me many, many times, and I'm sure I'll get around to them at some point. I mean, there's a reason why everyone quotes Simon Sinek and Start With Why. And then he also has a workbook that someone just mentioned to me last week called Finding Your Why. And it kind of walks you through it. I think it does recommend that you find a partner and you walk each other through it. From what I understand, like those are the go-to for working on your why. Sometimes when I work with a client, we're able to kind of work into that, but I don't have a formal framework that I can say like do this step and this step and this step. Whereas Simon Sinek seems to have it nailed. So having that core purpose, so like a big business, you know, they're going to have like their purpose statement, and us as individuals, I mean, why can't we have the same thing?
I think understanding them both from a personal and a professional standpoint allows you, I think, to protect yourself when you take a hit to your business. It doesn't affect your identity as much. I mean, it still does, but it I don't think it devastates you the way that if your identity was 100% in what you do and you didn't have that separation, then I think it's kind of scary.
I would agree. Yeah, that would be really scary to feel like your entire foundation got ripped out from under you.
Yeah, because I imagine there's a lot of people right now that do feel that way where, you know, if your identity is a chef 100%, and because I know chefs, I also see all the chop shows and stuff where, you know, their identity is 100% in what they do, that there's a lot of just like, oh my God, what do I do now going on?
Yeah. So it's, what would you call that? Would you call that finding your identity and what you do versus why you do it?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it's one of those things where I can look back on my own journey and be like, I didn't understand enough about who I was as a person, let alone a professional. So I think it might be finding your identity as you know, apart from your work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who are you if you don't have, you know, if you didn't have hands, if you didn't have something you could make or do, or that activity that kind of defines your profession. If you couldn't do that, who are you?
Yeah. That's
really deep and interesting question.
Well, I'm thinking about you know, like when people experience extreme issues, like they have tremendous success and then something happens, do they pivot or do they just train themselves to do what they did before in new ways? Like the painter Chuck Close, for example, was this amazing painter who did lifelike portraits with paint. He had like a spinal cord collapse, got paralyzed, and he taught himself to paint holding a paintbrush with his mouth. And yeah. So he devised like this grid system. And so it's like you have story after story of that kind of thing happening to where they reinvent themselves and almost become more than what they were before in this new way of living.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting the way limitations force us to be more creative?
Which is an interesting message that a lot is popping up a lot on social media and from, I'll call them the gurus and the thought leaders that are just like, you need more constraints. And it's just like, I understand that, yes, but it's so true. I mean, with constraints, it's amazing what you can actually do when you're not trying to like have everything perfect and problem free.
Yes. The only reason I had 3 short films that actually got finished and shown to people is because they had deadlines.
So kind of pivoting the conversation a little bit, one of the ways that you put a lot of your information out there effectively is Instagram. And why did you choose Instagram as kind of that platform to put forth some great information?
Because I failed at doing it through other ways. So I was writing on Medium and then and blogging, you know, stuff. And the writing aspect checked a box for me. It's like, I've got experience doing that. I enjoy doing that. But I would sit there with these long form articles and I just couldn't get them done and done at the rate that I needed to. And I just ended up like, what did I have a goal in 2019 to write 50 articles? Wow. And I have the ability to, but yet I think I wrote 5.
Oh, wow.
The goal is to make content, not necessarily to have a blog. So if the problem is I know that this format is really good for like these deep developed ideas and you bring in this facet and this facet and this research and those are the best articles. Mm-hmm. So my obstacle was the format itself. During this time, I also like I did some videos once I kind of got over fear of being on camera. I did a couple of videos with having conversations with people. But again, it was kind of like the amount of work that had to go into just one piece of content was really holding me back. Mm-hmm. So I kept going back to part of my goal is just to create the content, just to explore my ideas, just to see what I have to say and how people receive it. Like the ability to get feedback is really helpful. I found it to be really especially helpful for me to have an accurate view of myself. Mm-hmm. So I knew some people who were using Instagram and how they were using it. And I was like, that's kind of works how I like to talk through ideas, the way that Instagram does the carousels where the images are butted up right next to each other. And then you have a supporting caption, but all together, it's like a super short blog post. Hmm. It kind of forces you to focus on like a one idea kind of thing. And so as I thought that through, I was like, interesting, I should try this format next and just see if I can eliminate the obstacles that were keeping me from creating and publishing content the whole rest of the year. So I started this Instagram account in the end of October. Wow. And it wasn't really a goal of like building a follower count or building an audience. It was mostly for me. And if I built an audience or people found value in it, then that was like a bonus. Mm-hmm. So the other reason that Instagram in hindsight ended up being a good choice for me is the content lives there. Yeah, you can archive it. But for the most part, it's got a lifespan of a couple of days. Mm-hmm. So it kind of feels lower stakes. It's like I can put something out there and I don't feel this pressure to overthink it as much. When I did blog posts, I felt this pressure to like really do all the good writer checklist, you know, kind of stuff, which kept me from really meeting my main goal, which is to just create content. Mm-hmm. So far, I've been so much more consistent with Instagram since October than I ever was all year trying to do, you know, anything else.
And it sounds like you enjoy it and it's fun.
I do. I really enjoy the ability to have conversations with people, whether it's through comments or direct messages, and hear their thoughts on an idea. And the one thing I found too is like, you know, you might not spark people to have conversations with you or comment or, you know, engage, quote unquote, with you right away when you first start trying to. But the more that you reply to comments and the more that you send messages and you're just friendly and social on social media, people start to behave in kind. They'll come to your account and they'll comment because they know they're going to get to have a conversation with you. So it's a little bit of giving it time and having patience for that behavior training to happen so that they like people know, and people who also enjoy that will come and have these really awesome, thought-provoking conversations with you. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome. One of the posts that I think a lot about, and that it actually cracked me up, but at the same time got me thinking, was your post about being the dumbest person in the room. and it's funny because when I was writing this question, I wrote not being the smartest person in the room, because I'm like, I, for whatever reason, I had to soften the language. But then when I went back and looked at your post, I'm like, no, you literally wrote, don't be the dumbest person in the room. And so I wanted to retain that, because there's a power in saying that. There's a power in saying, don't be the dumbest person in the room.
Oh, it's actually the other way. It's be the dumbest person in the room.
I even got that wrong.
You're awesome. Still flipping it.
Well, it's funny because your mind wants to like protect yourself. Like the ego is like, no, you can't say that.
Right?
Oh, now I feel like the dumbest person in this interview.
Yes. All accomplished.
Exactly. So obviously, I can't protect my ego, can't get past this notion, but how have you learned to allow yourself to be the dumbest person in the room?
You know, the ego is stubborn. So it's a constant choice, but learning the concept and like kind of like when it dawned on me, it's hard. It still is. There's still days where it's like, ouch, that hurt, you know, but really what it came down to is I had learned a lot with during the marketing agency days. I kind of stumbled into the job in the first place. I didn't go to school for anything related to it. It just kind of fell in my lap and I was really thankful for it. But after some time, I really started to feel like I was running out of things to learn at the speed I like to learn. I started feeling like I knew stuff, and that was nice for my ego. Like, oh, look, you just said something and everyone on the team thought that was so profound. Like, you know, pat yourself on the back. But at the same time that I was feeling so good about that, I was also feeling so frustrated that I wasn't getting challenged. And as I thought about that problem, I started linking like, okay, I'm comfortable. That's nice being comfortable, but I'm also missing that challenge that I did have when I first got this job and I didn't really know anything. And I was able to just say, hey, let me try that. And I was getting challenges all the time and I was really happy with that. And as I started, this was all simultaneously with this idea of maybe I could have my own business or I could really take charge of my own career path and step out on my own. And all those thoughts were kind of all happening at the same time. So I started thinking like, well, how can I recreate what I had at the beginning of this job, where I felt scared and dumb and like I didn't know anything. Can I artificially recreate that for myself?
That's awesome.
And what ended up being the answer to that was joining, like I mentioned, Christo and watching his YouTube channel, The Future. Mm-hmm. And I found out that they had a community called the Pro Group. Mm-hmm. And the description, like people who are everyone from solopreneurs and agency owners, big agency owners, just a bunch of like really like creative professionals. Mm-hmm. And I did not feel like a creative professional. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, what if I join that group? And as soon as I thought that to myself, I was terrified. Mm. And I was like, I will feel so dumb. Like, I'm going to know nothing there. That is freaking terrifying and embarrassing and all these things. And then I stopped myself and I was like, but wait, wouldn't that be challenging though? And wouldn't I have so many people to learn from? And I could meet people that would be able to teach me things that would take me so long to figure out all by myself. Huh. I don't know. I'm going to sleep on it. Yeah. So I slept on it for maybe like a week. And then, and then I decided, luckily my husband is super gracious and is good with me verbal processing a lot that week. And I finally decided, you know what, I'm going to do it. And not only am I going to do it when they have those group calls, I'm going to make sure my camera's on. Mm-hmm. And on my first call, I'm going to say hi and introduce myself. And I, you know, like if I'm going to do this, I'm all in. Mm-hmm. I am not going to lurk until I feel like I know something and then I'll show up. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be like, hey, I'm here to learn. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to relish being the dumbest person in the room because I'm going to have so many teachers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I hit the button and like kicked off the thing. And basically that whole decision changed the trajectory of my life.
Has it been an exponential growth or is it one of those things where is it a nice steady line?
I have to try and like be objective to answer that question because from my perspective, I'm like, I can never grow fast enough. Like, my expectations are a little ridiculous. But if I actually look at me 2 years ago and I try and picture it as like somebody else mm-hmm. and not me, I would be like, yeah, that was exponential growth because every week I'm learning something new and I'm being challenged and I'm uncomfortable. I mean, it does help that the community has an amazing culture and people are really like, if you're willing to learn almost all of them, like there's always going to be outliers, but a good majority of the people are just like, yeah, let me help. Let me share my experience. Let me share what I did or different things like that. They're very, very generous. Mm-hmm. Like if you're willing to learn, like you're teachable. And then you also have a whole bunch of people that are willing to share. Like, how could you not grow at rather unusually rapid rate?
I'm curious how the community fosters a spirit of active learning, though. So not just learning for knowledge's sake, but mm-hmm. being willing to like be like, all right, you know, Chris or whomever just shared this nugget, I'm gonna act on this now.
Some of it is really like it's kind of individual, like everyone's has an individual responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I would say that there's enough people now in the group that have what I like to call an action bias. Mm-hmm. And they're vocal in the community. And so they'll one of them has actually become somewhat of a, what would it be called? I guess, you know, traditionally it'd be called like a group moderator or something like that. Like they're kind of helping take care of the community, but he will make posts that like, what's your takeaway from today's call? What are you going to do on Mondays? He started something, it was in the recent months, but where he makes posts where it's like, it's Monday, post one action thing, like something you're going to do this week. And in the last 2 weeks, it's even been what day and time are you going to do it? The other thing that's been a part of the group for a long time since before I was in the group, is doing your best to find what they call a peak performance partner. Hmm. And it's somebody that can be, you know, whether it's accountability or learning from each other, just somebody that you can talk to so you don't get lost in the largeness of the group. Mm-hmm. So you have that person that you try and talk to once a week or every 2 weeks, and you kind of define what that relationship needs to be depending on who both of you are. Mm-hmm. But because that's such an encouraged practice, there's a lot of these like little tricks, like productivity tricks that are common in the group, mm-hmm. like a common language, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stick with everybody. Some people, you know, come and go and it's not for them. But for the people that it's helpful for, there it just kind of compounds and everyone's encouraging and pushing one another.
That's so cool. I like that you mentioned the bias toward action, but I also like that you mentioned that there's the accountability partners, the people that partner up with you to be able to, I guess, hold up the mirror to reflect, you know, your own growth as well.
Yeah, it's helpful in that sometimes, like, I mean, we all deal with mindset stuff. And sometimes mm-hmm. we need that person to talk through whatever, you know, I want to do the recommended lead generation idea, but I've got like this resistance to it. And sometimes you need someone to talk through your resistance to things.
Yeah. Ooh, that's amazing.
Navigating through your own stuff, like you just being self-aware enough to know you're resisting something mm-hmm. is tough enough. Figuring it out on your own is some things that really is impossible to do by yourself.
I have to ask, what's something that people maybe talk favorably of that you're like, I just don't know? Like, I'll go first just so that you're not alone in this, but like, there's the whole story brand thing about, you know, like you're the perfect way to tell a story. And just, there's part of me that just wants to play the BS card so much, even though I know people get great results from it, but that's just me.
Yeah. You know, I there's things about that system that I appreciate. And then I, you know, maybe it is just the rebel in me yes. that makes me want to be like, not always. It's not a magic bullet. It does exactly. work, but it does have to have the right situation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm totally willing to acknowledge that might just be the rebel punk in me. I was just having a conversation about this yesterday, and my accountability partner encouraged me to like reach out to people, like whether it's through LinkedIn or any other way that I don't know, and just kind of reach out, not to sell, not to be salesy, not to, you know, because that's definitely something that's not my cup of tea, and I have good reasons, and you know, you're not going to ever turn me into a hardcore sales pitch person. I'm a relationship person all the way. But anyway, but she was like, no, don't pitch anybody. Just make connections. Like, just reach out to people you don't know, make connections, and definitely, you know, try and find people that fit like maybe an ideal client or an ideal customer or in like an industry you want to serve, and just see if they're willing to have a conversation with you about their industry, which is something I would totally recommend to people because it's a great thing to do to research. Yeah. But for me, I like sit there with so much resistance going like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to reach out to people I don't know. Like, I've just got comfortable talking to people I do know. But you know, we're working on it.
That's awesome. So you've mentioned several things, but what are you really focusing on and learning and developing in your business right now?
In my business right now, I've got a pretty strong emphasis on marketing, and the kind of marketing is like visibility. Hmm. Anything that helps with, I guess it kind of says it all, but for it to, you know, have a nice markety buzzy word, it's like the awareness stuff. And for me, like, that's a big personal development milestone. For some people, it's like, eh, yeah, it's just awareness, you know, and like for me, it's like, no, no, for me to be saying 2020 is the year I work on people knowing who I am is a big deal. And so it's a little celebratory milestone for me to be able to be working on that. The Instagram stuff then becomes not only am I exploring what I have to share, it's also contributing to just more people knowing that I exist. Mm-hmm. And in that way, you know, it's like it also contributes to like, okay, so how do I'm working on website stuff behind the scenes that's going to change a lot of what's currently there. Mm-hmm. And it's really all kind of contributing to that overarching goal of just I'm more okay with being visible than, okay, let's start working on that then.
That's awesome. Well, Rachel, this has been such a fun conversation. And since you mentioned earlier that you are a reader, what's one book that is just blowing your mind right now?
Right now, I'm bouncing between a lot of books. I keep like reading through some and then, you know, putting it down, picking up another one. But a book that I'm nearly through, I'm looking at it right now, I'm probably just past the halfway point that I'm really enjoying, is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. He's the FBI negotiator, mm-hmm. and he talks about negotiating and kind of ties what he learned in high stakes negotiations and how, you know, as much as we might go, oh, you know, negotiating, mm-hmm. like it's some like thing that's in a box somewhere. Like we negotiate all the time. It's mm-hmm. just communication. So I really am enjoying the way that he writes is kind of sharing stories of his past experiences as an FBI negotiator and then tying the core skills and tactics that he developed and how you can actually use them in other situations that aren't, you know, life or death. So that's just been a really informative and yet entertaining read. And it's also led me down this rabbit hole of articles by other people who've been either in the FBI or there've been police interrogators. Oh, things wow. like that. And I've got on my wish list now a couple of books by Joe Navarro. And he was also in the FBI. And it's all stuff around like human behavior and the ways that we communicate with each other. So body language, facial tics, things like that. And I find people fascinating and I find communication fascinating. And so I'm digging into that rabbit hole now.
That's awesome. I have been watching Chris Voss's masterclass, you know, on masterclass.com. And that is one of the most fascinating because he breaks down the techniques in person, but with an actor as well. So for example, you know, he'll do mirroring and labeling with an actor and he'll be like, you know, like mirroring the last 1 to 3 words that they say and help turn it into question and, oh, that sounds really frustrating or it feels this. And so it, like in the lower third of the screen, it will put a label on the technique that he's using.
That's really cool. I've been back and forth on getting a masterclass subscription for a long time. And when I saw mm-hmm. he had one, I was like, don't tempt me, masterclass.
The only reason I had one is because I got one as a Christmas gift. So that was one of the best Christmas gifts ever. And I'll share a quick book with you that I just picked up. Since you're really into learning, it's a book called Ultra Learning.
Oh, interesting.
And it's by Scott Young. And it's like the hardcore learning of, you know, like, oh, you want to learn Chinese in 3 months. Well, I'm not going to speak any English and I'm just going to totally immerse myself in Chinese. You know, it's that level of ultra learning. And so it's such an engaging read and it's fascinating to break down the learning process. He was the person that basically took MIT's computer science program and learned it, I think, in a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
that does sound really fascinating. That's like the nerd in me just got really excited.
Yeah, I think you'll really enjoy it.
Thank you for the recommendation.
Absolutely. Well, Rachel, this has been such a fun conversation. I'm so glad that we were able to make this happen. And I wish you all the success in helping people, you know, put a strategy together for moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris.
One takeaway from this conversation comes from the time when Rachel was talking about strategy in times of crisis. I really want to reiterate that it's important that you find or firm up your why, your reason for doing things, but also to make sure that your compass is working so that you know the direction that you're moving in, that you know you're moving towards the places that you want to go, but also to be adaptable in the moment and not planning too far ahead. I would also personally add, keep making, creating, and serving those around you any way you safely can. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.